jobs are at an all-time peak. How do you like that?
That's fantastic.
Corporate earnings are about to turn positive. Or they look like everything we see says that the corporate earnings that are coming.
By turn positive, it means higher than they were before. We didn't actually have lack of earnings. They were just lower than they had been before.
Earnings growth. In other words, we've gone 5 quarters now where you look from quarter to quarter. And corporate earnings in the United States, and by the way, it takes us about 2 months into the quarter before we know what they really are. We see that corporate earnings have been declining month over month for 5 months, and this is what our 5 quarters. And of course, you can look at it a different way, and you say, okay, where are the earnings versus where they were last year, revenues and everything else,
right?
And for 6 quarters, year over year, they've been down, and it looks very strongly at this point like third quarter revenues and earnings in corporate America will be up. Now,
let me come at this again, just because it's...
They really, will rise.
Just a minute. There's a lot of people misunderstand economists when we say that sort of thing.
They hear
us say corporate earnings are down, and so they think, well, companies must be losing money. No, what we're saying is they're making less money than they did before. They're still making a profit. They're not laying people off. They're hiring more people. But their earnings are not as good as they had been the year before and the year before that for 6 quarters. So that's a year and a half. And now we've got some shifts happening.
And you could talk about sailing.
Right.
You like to go sailing, right?
Yeah. You said Caribbean. I'm talking about a different kinds of sails.
The sailing in the United States has gone up.
In September, U.S. retail sales rose 0.6%.
That's what I'm trying to say. There's more sailing in the United States.
There's much more sailing. Yeah. And what we've seen consistently for the past year and a half, except for August, has been a continual small incremental rise in consumer confidence and consumer spending. All of that eventually leads to profits. What we just saw 3 months ago was a big report that came out that said, you know, that big thing that everybody complains about, the divide in income. The lower income people's wages are going up.
Yep.
That separation is stopping, and it's now affecting the, and this is something we've been talking about for a long time, that this is going to happen. It has to happen when profits come back go away completely.
For the first time since the Great Recession, year over year, billionaires' total net worth declined over the last 12 months.
Is that a good thing?
I don't know.
Is that a bad thing?
The point is that if the lower end of the economic spectrum is rising and the upper end of the economic spectrum is shrinking, we're getting closer together.
Right. And I can give you some why here. The why is we're seeing hiring pick up.
Mm-hmm.
From the time of the Great Recession, the whole concept of everybody's idea in business is do it slimmer, do it leaner, do it meaner, get less people doing the same amount of work or maybe more. And we've reached burnout.
Mm-hmm. We've reached the
excess. People at the top started seeing their profits go down. And when as their profits go down, they say, whoa, why is this happening? You guys were doing so great. And all of the exhausted people in their workforce goes, we need more people.
That actually is something that a lot of our listeners can remember. General Electric in the 1990s became the largest by capitalization, by stock value, company in the world. And during the preceding decade or more, the chairman, whose name just, the president, I mean,
Welch.
CEO, Jack Welch, yeah, practiced Six Sigma and the Pareto principle to the extreme, where every year he would fire 10% of his managers, the bottom 10%.
Right.
And
it caught up with him.
The problem is that if you trim 10% off the bottom long enough, you get to where it's not bad people you're getting rid of. You're getting rid of good people. And he didn't quite get that. And this is the fascinating thing. If you look at General Electric today, it's a fraction of the capitalization it was when he left it, because he left it at the burnout point.
Right. He said, well, I've done well. I'm going to leave now.
And
quickly ran out the door.
So what is the biggest one in the world today? Is it Apple or Google?
Apple. No, it's not Google. Apple and Exxon flip back and forth regularly.
Okay. So you've got two different philosophies there, and basically we're gradually figuring this out economically. So why did we have five quarters of declining earnings, et cetera, et cetera? Simple reason. If you notice, during that same five quarters, hiring rose. When corporations hire a lot of new people, their efficiency drops off, their productivity drops off, their earnings drop off, because generally speaking, other than maybe taxes, the most expensive thing in a corporation, well, even counting taxes, the most expensive thing in any corporation is the employees. And when you hire a lot of employees that don't know what they're doing, your productivity drops off, your revenues drop off, everything drops off. Now, does that reverse itself? This is the nice thing. It's a long-term investment by the corporation. As these people come up to speed, the profitability and revenues will rise. Why will the revenues rise? I mean, the profitability, because the people are now being efficient. They're not a money loss to the corporation. There's a gain, so profitability should rise. Why would revenues, that's the gross amount of money coming in, because if it's done across the board, we're hiring more people. That means that the people that are hired by one corporation can go out and spend their money buying things that's made by another corporation. And so as our hiring goes up and our employment goes up, every time in history we've had a relatively high unemployment and we have started recovering from it, productivity drops, revenues drop, everything drops in the corporate world because they're absorbing a new set of employees that don't know what they're doing.
Right. And at this point, with the hiring going up, with the income going up, expect to see some more of that because there are more people coming into the workforce, and it's going to be a big transition. It doesn't happen all at once. Mm-hmm. Some companies start it, other companies get involved, and that means that we're going to see lowered productivity for the next year or so. And then we're going to see a boost in productivity. And I can say this with confidence, just like what you have just said. If you look at history coming out of one of these long-term downturns, this is the way it works. It would be very helpful at this point if we got some governmental shifts that would lower the regulations for new businesses and that would allow hiring to be easier instead of harder. It's just gotten harder.
Have you been smoking in illegal or controlled substances? No. Okay. Well, not going to happen. Let me tell you, if that had some hope until Wells Fargo.
It had some hope until Wells Fargo and until the implosion that Donald Trump off of issues has had, that it would be part of the debate even if he didn't make it into office. He raised a point that a lot of Republicans...
He made a very valid point, yeah.
A lot of Republicans agreed with, but then he's been off topic for several weeks, and those off-topic things, that kills you for later on. Mm-hmm. Even if he gets elected, and that's a really hard thing to do right now, if he gets elected, there's absolutely no chance that anything that he's putting forth on his agenda is going to get passed because he's gone off agenda. He's gone off
topic. In other words, the focus is no longer on his policy. The focus is on him.
Right. And as long as that happens, the good things that I was able to point out about Donald Trump, he doesn't like the way regulations are going. He needs to lower those. He never came up with a plan to do it. He just said that he was going to lower it by 70%. I don't know how – I was taking him. Okay, that sounds really great. I don't know how he's going to do it.
Put all the regulators in jail.
Right. Well, that's the problem, is that without the plan, at least if he had run on that as his agenda item, then the Republicans can get behind that. Democrats can get behind that.
Paul Ryan and the conservatives in Congress were behind cutting regulatory overreach, which is going on.
Right.
And the difficulty that we run into is Wells Fargo, in my opinion, by opening up 2 million, that's a lot.
Yeah.
2 million accounts without people's permission and charging them fees on those accounts without their permissions. That's the poster child for an unregulated section in a financial company.
Yeah.
And that is...
And I don't just mean regulations in the financial world. I mean regulations across the board. The tax code is a form of regulation,
yep.
And it's too complex.
And there's another one that popped up that did not make the headlines. There was a truck in Maverick County, Texas, that went around a curve too fast, an 18-wheeler, flipped over, and exploded. It caught on fire, and it exploded. Did you see that?
No.
It was full of Takata airbag explosive, the explosives that go in the airbags, okay?
All right.
And it killed some people in Maverick County, Texas. And
it's a tragedy.
Well, there was this investigation, and they discovered that the trucking company, Interstate Trucking Company out of Florida, has operated that truck for several years with the trailer not having any brakes.
Oh.
And they just,
there.
Every time they get pulled over, they get heavily ticketed, and they just keep going because there wasn't sufficient federal oversight on that trucking company. And guess what? That's going to be, what I'm saying is across the board, we're having these instances of companies that are so blatantly violating the regulations that already exist that I strongly suspect we're going to get more regulations.
And I agree. And the problem with that, and it's a major problem, is that no matter what regulation you have out there, there are still going to be bad apples.
Sure.
And you cannot prevent them. Wells Fargo just went through the Great Recession as being the poster child.
The hero.
The hero. They stuck to their knitting. They didn't give these ninja loans. They didn't go and get involved in the subprime disaster. And they've been shouting about it from the rooftops. We're the ethical bankers. They got hubris. Every time that happens,
oh, I love that word.
Hubris.
Yeah.
That's when you're so arrogant that you think you cannot fail because you lucked out the last time around. And it was based on a couple of board meeting votes that came very close to them getting into the subprime mortgage world, and now they can all say, oh, it was brilliant, I didn't do it, when they almost did. The problem that happens with regulation, it's something that, you know, the concept of a nanny state, the concept of any of that, the government cannot expect its regulations to prevent fraudulent activity. If somebody's going to commit fraud, they're going to commit fraud. There are no regulations on the book or any differences in the way the regulators are enforcing those regulations that would have prevented another Bernie Madoff today. His entire organization could still exist because he was operating in secret in certain situations,
mm-hmm.
outside of regulatory purview, and he had these areas where he was regulated and he was passing every test there, and the places where he wasn't, he had corruption, horrible corruption, and that's still going to happen. If our response every time is to say we need more government regulation, rather than saying he broke the law, there's already laws there, put him in prison, let's see how we can get it back, we cannot prevent people from breaking laws. We can punish them for doing it. We can teach them why they shouldn't. But there are people that are going to break laws anyway.
And I think this is important, we can recognize a couple of things and deal with it. Number one, the SEC, Lord, I hate to say this, is underfunded by Congress every year because, frankly, the people in the House don't like them. And the reason the people in the House don't like them is because a lot of the people in the House of Representatives get a lot of money from the securities industry to keep the SEC from investigating them too thoroughly. Now, whether the regulations are outlandish or not outlandish, rather than replacing the regulations, by underfunding the police force, you don't lower the incidence of crime.
No.
And, you know, fund the SEC, let them, and the other thing is, and this is not likely to change, but man, we need to. The SEC was set up to be incompetent. The board members are half appointed by Democrats and half appointed by Republicans, with the sitting president appointing the chairperson. Right now, instead of having five members, they have three, because two have not been appointed. And the reason is, and this is funny, Elizabeth Warren has blocked the Democrats' nominee because he wasn't radical enough to the left.
And the Republicans,
and the Republicans have said, since you're not going to allow this guy, we're not going to allow. But this is they blocked the Democratic nominee.
Yeah, the Democrats blocked the Democratic nominee.
President Obama said, if you're not going to have a Democrat, I'm not going to put a Republican on there, because they would have a majority of Republicans on the board. And
that's kind of
And then Elizabeth
Warren is enforcement. Should not be political.
Right, and you know, we don't do that with the Federal Reserve. We don't do that with any of the other commissions. The SEC is a political animal that's designed to be inactive. The point is that whatever political party is in power can block And what happened during Bernie Madoff's time? He was a heavy contributor to both political parties. So they didn't dare investigate him too hard. He'd contact some congressmen, and they would jump all. By the way, what Elizabeth Warren asked last week, wrote a scathing letter to the president. That's the term that was used
scathing.
All over. To fire.
How do you scathe something?
She did, apparently.
You can do scathing.
Yeah, she was. It apparently has something to do with cutting with a knife. Fire Mary Jo White as the chairman of the SEC because she's not radical enough in Elizabeth Warren's direction of being radically forced. What she wants to do is force corporations to publicly disclose all political contributions. The chairman of the SEC, Mary Jo White, has said back to her, A, that's against the law. B, our job is to ensure that investors receive proper information, not politicians.
Right.
And we need to restructure the cops. I mean, you know, basically, as you said, Bernie Madoff could do it again, and the reason he could do it again is the SEC is a political organization.
Right. And that's when we're talking about regulatory oversight.
By the way, there's no law. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the regulatory oversight is an overreach. You can make laws to prevent everything, and we'll start looking like France or like Germany. It doesn't prevent crime, though. The assault rate in Germany is higher than the assault rate in the United States. They're very happy about their gun crime being less, but their other crime is more. And you throw that all together, you say you cannot regulate every aspect of a society. You can't do it. I mean, you can do it. It just captures law-abiding citizens rather than the criminals.
We need to ban knives.
So we're going to ban everything. You need a permit to have a piano because piano wire can be used. I saw that in a movie.
Right.
You need a permit for everything, and that's where things could go. If you look at business practices to innovate, to come up with new uses for old items, or even come up with completely new items, you can't over-regulate or you stifle innovation.
We could have a piece of cake. Very simple.
That sounds
everything
great.
That's not forbidden is mandatory, and everything that's not mandatory is forbidden. And the second rule is some animals are more equal than others.
Yes. Orwell should be
all animals
today.
All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others.
Right. And that concept where when we have two sides to a campaign with a voice, the other two candidates don't really have a voice. You don't see them or hear them unless you actively go out and look for them.
When he said, excuse me, what's Aleppo?
Right. Well, that's the voice that we hear. And the fact that he made one mess up on the air is, and I'm.
That's all it takes.
That's all it takes, unless you're Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton.
Ask Rick Perry.
Yeah, absolutely. At some point, once the major parties have decided, then it's really not possible for their candidate to do enough wrong for the party to step away from them. And you can choose the party there. And I had somebody tell me yesterday that I'm just not going to vote. I'm so disgusted with the system. And I said, well, there nobody's going to hear you not vote. If you're that disgusted, go in and pencil in another name. You put in Mickey Mouse. If 20% of the population votes for somebody that's not running, they're going to hear it. Use your vote the way you should use your vote. If you want to settle for one of the people, and if in the case that you truly believe in a candidate, then don't settle. You've chosen a candidate. But if you want to settle for a candidate, you do that. You say, this is the person I think that's best and most likely to do the job out of what I have available. Then vote for them. Don't not vote. If you don't vote, it's going to get worse next time. We need to have our voices heard, and we've got that as our right. It is protected in every form of our government to go out there and saying, you guys are, I'm going to use the word nincompoop because that's repeatable on the air. I'm going to be unlike the major candidates. That concept of our voice speaking, and I bring this up now because your voice speaks if you're an investor. If you're a shareholder, you have a vote. If you are an owner of a mutual fund, you have a vote. You get to say whether or not you agree with what's going on. Use that vote. Don't just get disgusted. Otherwise, you're going to face the damage. If you don't vote and you call in and you want to complain about something, I'm not going to listen to you. You can vote and say I'm voting for Mickey Mouse, though I think that's a Walt Disney might send in their CEO as president if Mickey gets elected. So maybe we should choose somebody.
I don't know. He's doing a pretty good job. We were at Disney World, and that's pretty much the way I'd like everything to run. I don't know. It costs a lot to stay at Disney World.
I don't know. The constant "It's a Small World" music playing everywhere.
I didn't hear it the whole time we were there.
Oh, that's not bad. I've just put the earbug in everybody's ear now. They're going to hear that song for the rest of the day.
Well, there's a headline in the Wall Street Journal that has one of my favorite words in it.
What's that?
Financial literacy is still abysmal everywhere.
Abysmal.
Abysmal. That's my word for the day. Abysmal. Okay. Basically, a survey of 30 countries shows few people can perform basic financial calculations. For example, and maybe somebody can tell me this. If you had $100 at 2%, at 5% interest.
Uh-huh.
No, $100 at 2% interest. That was it. Compounding, 2% a year over 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have more than $110?
No. Yes, you would. Okay.
That was one of the questions. And they're fairly simple questions that a whole series of simple questions. Like if you loaned your friend $25 and he paid you back a day later, how would you have received any interest? If he paid you back $25 later, would you have received any interest? Apparently, a lot of people thought you would have.
Interest from whom?
From him. Interest income.
He was interested in the loan.
But
I don't,
the
that,
point
that
is,
kind
that
of interest
you went through this thing and
so
like
one day later, you got 30 days before you can start charging.
Very, very, very simple questions. What I consider to be very, very simple questions. That one about 5% over, 2% over 5 years.
Yeah, you said the question two different ways, and I was trying to figure out what you
were. It's 2% over 5 years. Would you have more than $110? And the answer is yes, because of compound interest. But the point is that
even without compound interest,
you'd have 110 with
exactly
simple interest.
Right.
But would you have more than 110? That's the question. And
The
answer is because of compound interest, yes, you'd have about 112. But this is the point in this. What? How much would we have?
The 2% on the extra $2 is only going to be 4 cents, and then the next year it's going to be 6 cents, or. Yeah, so you wouldn't have 112, but you would have more than 110.
Okay, anyway, it's 111 point something, but it rounds
right
up. And the point is that I want to make is it's not taught in school. It's not taught in college. It's certainly not taught in elementary school. And we talk about the fact that we need to change our education system. Man, do we ever. Among other things, largely I think because teachers have a teacher's retirement fund that will take care of them. They generally have the 403Bs are not regulated the same way by the Department of Labor, and as a result, they are abysmal in most cases. That's my word for the day, obviously. And because teachers in many cases don't understand those issues, the students are not learning those issues, and the public doesn't know those issues, and they just don't get it.
It's $110.10.
It is?
Compounded. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
There's just slightly more because you would have to do fractional pennies on there too, but there'd be 0.1 additional pennies.
But there'd be more than 110.
Yes, by a dime.
By a dime.
Or if we rounded up by 11 cents. So, yes, it'd be more.
So the point is that we are, as a population, and by the way, this survey did not include the United States. The last survey in the United States puts us 14% behind the European countries that had abysmal rates.
Right.
So we do need to change our education system, and it is very resistant to change.
Our lower education system is falling fast. Our upper education system is very, very nice.
But they still don't teach finance.
No, they don't teach finance. Well, unless you're just taking finance. But even this is something as I have tried helping people taking the lower econ classes. They're still most of the econ 101, even micro, macro, doesn't matter which one. Most of the stuff that's being taught there is wrong. The major premises, and economists joke about it, that you got to get through the bad stuff before you can actually start learning good stuff. Because it does when they're talking about the supply-demand curve, it's not linear like that. There's a curve, and they have it. They teach it with a straight line, and that leads to bad decisions, lots of them, in business, and we have to play some commercials.
Yeah. It's what you always say.
I do.
I bet you say that to all your co-hosts.
As a matter of fact, I do.
All right.
All right. We'll be back on the other side. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number in here is 254-773-1400.
And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we, as Lynn Willey has pointed out, we're pretty good at that.
What, saying our names?
Yes.
Yeah, we're very proud that we know how to say our names.
And yeah, we could say them in concert.
Yeah, we could also say them in concertina wire.
No, just, I don't think so.
So very, very much more loudly.
Okay, we have a caller.
We have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach.
Go ahead. Yes, brave and intrepid person. Go ahead.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Okay.
And before I ask the question, after that I'll hang up. Before I ask the question, you know, they said there's no such thing as a dumb question.
No, there isn't.
So mine might be a dumb one. But
No. Okay.
You just said there wasn't one.
I don't understand this APR, annual percentage rate. You know?
Okay. As opposed to the simple percentage rate.
I pay so much interest every month and they come up with this APR thing. And can you explain that, please?
Mm-hmm. You want to explain it, or you want me to?
Sure. I will. And is this in the context of like a credit card? Are you getting a home loan, or are you going
bank.
To be giving somebody else a loan?
Let's say credit card.
Okay.
Perfect.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks for the call.
I understand that one, actually, because I looked it up.
Yeah. APR is annual percentage.
API. Is
API.
Yeah. Anyway, what happens is if you just look at it and say, okay, let's just say I'm going to charge you 10% and you borrow $100. Obviously, at the end of the year, you'd owe $110. Except that this wonderful thing called compound interest goes to work. And what most banks, when they pay on CDs and credit cards, when they do loans, you know, anything, they actually do compound interest by the day.
Right.
So that each day you have 1/365th of that 10% charge.
Not this year.
Not this year. Well, 366.
Yes, okay. This year's a leap year.
So what happens then is that then compounds forward. So your API on a loan will be higher than your interest rate. In other words, they'll charge you slightly more per year than what they say as their advertised interest rate. And that's the difference between simple and compound interest. Now, at the bank, they do the same thing. They offer a CD at such and such a percent, but you'll notice that the API on the CD is slightly higher. That means if you leave it there all year, you'll actually have a little more than the $10 that you thought. And it's similar to the question that we had, that the issue, by the way, it came out, both of us were wrong, $100.
$110.41.
Yeah, you have $100, 5% interest, 2% interest, 5 years, and it's $110.41. And the only way we knew that, by the way, is we both have Excel running on our computers. We pull it up real quickly and stick it in there and do a future value calculation. It's not intuitive. But the problem with this non-intuitive solution is the fact that we're all involved in it. We all wind up making loans. We all wind up having credit cards. We all have 401ks and or IRAs or whatever. And if we don't understand how that system works, we can't make good decisions.
Right. So on a credit card, when you make that charge, you're sitting at the restaurant and you've just eaten a great meal, or a not-so-great meal, doesn't really matter. You pay with the credit card, you get up, and you leave. No interest is being charged on the amount you just put on the card.
Mm-hmm.
You've got till the end of the billing cycle.
And which sometimes the billing cycles are slightly shorter than you think.
Right. And the billing cycle doesn't have to do so much with the number of days in the year or the days in the month. It has to do with the number of days in the billing cycle. You have to look at your contract for that. Once your billing cycle's up and they say you owe this money on this day, if you pay after that, then you have interest charged on it. So we're just going to say you $20 meal, and it's in the middle of the
Where
billing cycle.
Where did you get a $20 meal? McDonald's?
You get a lot of places for $20. It's,
right.
I mean, Subway, McDonald's. I mean, they're not.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it the finest
cuisine. I thought
cuisine.
You had a meal with several people.
No, no. Well, by yourself. So you charged it on your credit card, and you are going about your business, and you pay the minimum payment. If all you had on there was $20, well, your minimum payment's likely to be $20 because there's a relatively new law that says that you've got a minimum fee that has to be above a certain amount. Because credit cards, on their statements, you'll see it, their minimum payment changes every month, every billing cycle, and it's to be determined if you paid that amount every month for the rest of a series of time, it would take you about 4 years to pay it off, but they lower the minimum payment every month. So the reality is that it's closer to 20 years before you pay something off if you only pay the minimums.
And you know why they call it interest that you pay?
Because
the company that has the credit card is very interested.
Right.
In
they don't even send you a thank you note.
No.
They're not even nice about it. You think about the amount of money that they're charging people that, you know, they're just busily going about paying their minimum payment for decades.
And a lot of people don't even get their statements in the mail anymore, so they don't look at them. They don't see all those disclosures that regulators have caused to be on the statements.
You have to actually go to a specific page on the webpage and click a view statement and then download it and then scroll through it.
And this is... If you really wanted to manage a credit card correctly, what you do is you pay the bill before they send you, you pay the balance before they send you the bill. Now, that sounds a little strange because what most of us do is we wait till we get the bill and then we look at the bill, some people at least.
Right.
They look at the bill and they say, okay, I need to pay at least this much. Well, I'll pay that much. And good old USAA, which is a pretty virtuous company in most aspects.
Right.
Has a very interesting policy about that. In many cases, they'll say your minimum payment is zero,
right,
even if you have because you've made some other payments.
Yeah, you made payments
the last three
times
months.
In a row of on time, so you don't have to pay this month.
And
they say, that's out of the goodness of our heart, and a little interest payment going in there and every time.
A little. They typically charge like 1% a month on average.
And that's if you have good credit.
Yeah.
If you have an old card that you haven't looked at recently, it's worth looking at it. You might find that you've got a 28% interest on there.
And one of the things that, for instance, I get pretty regular mail that says, hey, you're a veteran, you're eligible to refinance your VA loan, and it'll be a lower payment.
We'll just spread it out over the next three centuries.
And you know, what it boils down to is my current payment is based on the time I started the loan for 30 years into the future. Well, I've had it for a number of years, so my principal that I owe is down, and that's all they're going to loan me.
Right.
So that means if I extend it for
another
30 years, I'll have a lower payment.
And
so
they'll make a lot of money in the process.
And then they'll say, and we'll only charge you these fees, and we'll just throw them in there, and we won't charge you anything extra.
And that's where the mortgage folks are making money right now, is in the origination fees. When they get to charge $4,000 to give you the loan, they may give you a great interest rate, but they're getting that fee.
And the funny thing is, I've carefully looked at this and looked at the interest rate we're paying. They're not actually offering a lower – now, the guy – this has to do with the question. They're offering a lower interest rate but not a lower API.
Right.
So they're offering me the same interest rate in reality.
If you count in fees and everything
but
else.
But people don't understand how compound interest works. All they see is a lower payment.
Right.
And not realize that they increase their debt with a lower payment. And that sounds really goofy, but that's just the reality. And what happens is they get, let's just say they get $1,000 in fees every time they roll one of these things over. And they mass mail, and $1,000 is probably on the low end. They say, well, no fees, no extra charges, no points. Come on, guys, you're doing this for free.
Yeah, out of the goodness of our hearts, we're spending all this postage.
But when you finally get the contract to do it, it'll be many, many, many pages of lots of interesting little fees that you didn't know were there. And this is the point. If the public is not educated.
Well, I said no interest and no points, but I didn't say these other fees in the advertisement.
Right. If the members of our society don't understand what used to be sophisticated finance, then they're not prepared to deal with it, and this is the point.
It's not sophisticated anymore.
Most of us need to deal with it on a regular basis. It's like people didn't used to understand how to drive cars either. We educated them on how to drive cars.
We need to get to educating people on what the credit card payments are and what the loans of their mm-hmm. on their mortgage
and
are
how
their
investments
vehicles,
work.
How investments work. This is a big part of our lives. We have this responsibility now, but it doesn't have anything to do with most of the education we get. And we've got some commercials.
Commercials again?
More commercials.
Oh
yeah.
Man. You think we were capitalists or something?
Something like that.
All right.
All right. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number in here is 254-773-1400.
We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we have a caller on 773-1400 who has been intrepid and brave and decided to join us. Go
I'm
ahead.
A caller.
Yes, you are. Yes, I know. Call. Intrepid and brave caller. Go for
it. I want to welcome you back, Jeff.
It's good to be back.
I know you've been off sick. I've been troubled with a little of that myself, you know.
Yeah, you know, this getting old is not for sissies.
No, that's right. I wanted to say that the fellow that called in, I felt sympathy for him because I called him the same question several months ago, and I got a long and complicated answer from you and Jake. And Jake, and you did a good job, except I think you missed the point of the question. Can I comment on that?
Certainly.
Okay. See, it comes from the fact that on TV we see mortgage rates at 3.5%. Annual percentage rate, APY, is 3.9%.
Right.
And we say, Wait a minute. That can't be right. Somebody's fooling me.
It's just compound interest.
And so I know, but see, that's the problem. You answer the question like you don't know the difference, like we don't know the difference between simple interest and compound interest, which may be true in some cases. However, the question is because the advertising that they show does not show it's two different kinds of interest.
Well, that's the point. Is
the listener misses that. I know I missed it. I know better. I was taught interest in high school.
Well,
you know, I knew the difference, but I had missed the idea that all they were doing, they were slipping in this idea of two different kinds of interest.
Without
advertising it.
Right. You know the stuff at the bottom of the commercial on the television where it's got that three paragraphs long thing that nobody can
read? Unless you put your VCR on hold.
And even if you did that, it's not in high enough definition. Even in the HD television, you can't read it.
And this is, let me tell you something.
I wish you would.
Mr. Flying Fox. In the past, when they
advertised my secret identity.
Yeah, well, everybody knows you're a publicly flying fox. So anyway, the point is that in the past, advertising for mortgage rates simply said 3.5%. Since the mortgage crisis under Dodd-Frank's, they're required to tell you the real interest rate. That real interest rate has been there all along, back when it was strictly paper and the good old days.
Yeah.
If you got we used to say, man, if you could get something below 10%, you're in great shape, you know. If you got a 10% loan, it really wasn't 10%. It was really closer to 11. But they didn't tell you that. They just gathered the money and went on about. That's why banks, you know, remember the banker, what was the thing? You open at 9, close at 3, and on the back 9 by 5. The bankers could just sit around and make money because they were telling people one thing, which was technically right, but factually wrong.
I got you.
And so when they put that second number in there, we have just become aware that that's not the real interest rate. They were doing it all along.
You know, I have to confess that I was tripped up and knowing as much as I've learned in high school about interest rate, I didn't catch on because it's not that obvious. And the whole idea is to keep it from being obvious.
I want to make another point here. This, I think, is very important. Wells Fargo, which was our best, which we advertise as being our best friend and our buddy and on our side, opened up 2 million accounts and charged people fees. that's normal behavior for a corporation. And that one of the things we need to get, and it's always been that way, we're just becoming aware of it, the bank is not your friend. The insurance company is not your friend.
Let me tell you some things that isn't that are not being covered right now about Wells Fargo. The damages to the customers, this is not me defending them, but it's letting you know the reaction that's happened here. The damages to the customers over this was somewhere around $400,000. That was all paid back at the time of the discovery, which, 5,300 people were fired. So $400,000 of damages. And that was paid back dollar for dollar. Then in comes the new bureau, and they charged the company $185 million, which I think is fantastic. It may not even have been enough. This was a gross misuse of their ability to mess with their customers. But that money went to the government. It didn't go to the people that were damaged. It didn't go to the people whose trust had been violated.
But there's another thing that may have been relatively minor damage, but it was a violation of integrity.
Right. I think the people who were violated should be compensated.
It opened up a very nice can of worms, because now people are calling in, and apparently Merrill Lynch just got hammered on this. J.P. Morgan has been hammered on it. Cross-selling. What they were doing is encouraging cross-selling. They were encouraging people strongly to take loans against their investment accounts at relatively low interest loan, and invest it in more stuff that they could get more commissions on. But talking about damaging people, and of course the market has not performed well enough to accommodate the interest they were paying on the loan, so they were losing money. And they were all being kind of quiet about it, thinking, well, this must be good because my broker at J.P. Morgan or my financial advisor at Wells Fargo Financial Advisors or whatever said it was good for me. Only now is it starting to pop up. Now, we're going to see. I don't know if it's going to make the headlines, because there's not probably as many of them. But the whole concept of cross-selling, if a person is a broker working for a brokerage firm, no matter how independent they say they are, having been there for 25 years, I can tell you they are pushed to do cross-selling of high-margin items. They're all pushed to do that.
I'm going to say some things. We're talking about problems, but there are solutions. And the government even has some of the solutions already. So Medicare fraud is a very real thing. Doctors and medical organizations get hit with it. They're doing the wrong practice, they're overcharging, they're cross-selling when Medicare is involved. And the government says, okay, we've regulated this. They have a whistleblower program where 10% of the damages goes to the whistleblower.
Yes, and I've got my whistle ready. I just can't find anything to blow it over.
If they would apply this to Wells Fargo and then apply the damages after the costs it takes for the government to prosecute or to show here's what they did wrong and you owe us this fine. The government should be paid for what they're in. I mean, we don't want to raise taxes for this to happen. But then they need to turn around and pay the people back that were damaged. And that's, this new bureau, and it's a great idea.
Consumer Protection.
Right, the Consumer Protection Bureau. It's a great idea. This bureau is there. It's this new concept. And they have the ability to levy fines against people. They have two uses for those fines: their own budget and educational programs given in seminars. How are they going to spend $185 million? I mean, that's not a huge amount to Wells Fargo.
Actually, they turn it back to Congress.
Well, they're not supposed to. It's supposed to, according to their law, it's supposed to be on their books for education.
Mm-hmm.
And how? So they're going to buy public service announcement advertisements on radios. They're going to buy a billboard that says, watch your credit cards. That doesn't help. If people knew that they were, if you'd break this across 2 million accounts, there's 2 million accounts, every account, there's $185 million. If everybody who had one account opened fraudulently gets $18.50, they're going to report it next time it happens.
Well, it happened to us. This is the reason I say they don't report it. We got a credit card in the mail, my wife did, from Wells Fargo. And she said, oh, that's interesting. And she put it in her little drawer where she keeps things like that.
Right, because you have Wells Fargo stuff.
And,
why not?
And The thing is, they weren't billing her on that card. They were billing her on her regular card. She was unaware that the monthly fee for having the card had doubled. And this right. is, and here's where the actual damage occurred. I checked our credit report. We have a really good credit rating, but it's not as good as it could be. USAA told me, here's the problem. You've got too many credit cards open with too much on it. And I looked, and sure enough, there are some of those accounts open from Wells Fargo that we never asked for that raise our ability to go out and spend money on a credit card, so it lowers our credit score, which means that if we get a mortgage or something, it'll raise the interest rate on the mortgage. So this is the kind of thing that I think they were upset about. I think that's good.
Yeah, and I agree. And the upset is fine. The fee, maybe even not enough. The fact that the CEO is losing his job over it and he's not going to get a compensation package on the way out. If you think about $185 million, the two people who have lost their bonuses on it paid for like 80% of that for 1 year's bonuses. Mm-hmm. There were 5,300 people that lost their jobs over it, though.
They are the ones who got hurt. And that's, by the way, that's one of the things that in the congressional hearings.
Well, wait
that they
just
got
a minute there, Jeff and Jake.
Mm-hmm.
You crossed over something there, and I think maybe I missed it.
Okay.
So you need to clarify it, and that is, are you saying that Wells Fargo gave you credit cards that you didn't ask for?
Yeah.
Okay, because that happens all the time to people. I just throw mine in the trash.
But the problem is you get the credit card.
It isn't about the plastic in your hand. It's about the account that's open on your name.
Unless you reject that card, unless you go back to them and say, take this back.
I didn't order this.
They're going to charge you an annual fee on that card. They'll just bill it to another card.
Just think like you're sitting at a restaurant and the owner comes out and says, let me give you some of the best food we have.
Yep.
Like I have USAA card.
Mm-hmm.
And so are you saying that they would bill interest to that card?
They could. Not the interest, the fees.
Here's where the fees came from in the Wells Fargo thing. If you open up a bank account, it's a free bank account, and the employee is going, well, it's free. This shouldn't hurt anybody. But you have to have some money to open it up with. So they transfer over $25. If you have a debit card out and you think you've got $25 more in your account than you do because it's in another account now, you swipe the card, you get an insufficient funds thing. If you signed up for their special service, it costs $12. You got $12 that just got charged to you that shouldn't have been charged. And that's why the damages are only $400,000 or so. That's not a huge amount of money. The trust violation is the issue. And we're about out of time. Thank you for calling.
Good call. Thanks for calling.
All right.
And if you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail during the weekends. If you would, do you want to give the local number?
The local number is 254-947. Now, this is hard. 947-1111.
And a toll-free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. If you want to email us, you can email
Jeff@tpwc.com or Jake@tpwc.com.
You can go to our webpage at tpwc.com. We've got podcasts there and our philosophy. Until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Your Fox News station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.